We've got 9 judges. For the first time in more than a year, the U.S. Supreme Court will be at capacity with the addition of Judge Neil Gorsuch. Soon after the court resumes its current term on April 17th, they'll hear oral arguments on a church versus state separation case, Church of Columbia v. Pauley out of Missouri. It is anticipated that Gorsuch will bring the full measure of his personality to the bench, although the late Justice Scalia, by any measure, will be a hard act to follow. Dahlia Lithwick writes about the Supreme Court and the law for Slate and is host of the podcast Amicus. Dahlia, welcome.
Thanks for having me, John.
We talk continually about it's a, you know, conservative, 4 justices conservative, 4 justices to the left, and Anthony Kennedy, the mysterious swing vote. We talk about that quite a lot. But do the justices themselves resist those categories? And has the whole nuclear option process that brought Gorsuch back to the court tried to solidify those roles? And I'm wondering what the justices think of that.
It's a great question. And I think that probably the overarching lesson I've had from the last year is we don't know what the justices think about any of this hyper-politicization of the Supreme Court that's happened in the Senate, because with very few exceptions, they've said virtually nothing for the 14 months since Justice Scalia died. What we've heard, to the extent we've heard anything, is we really miss Justice Scalia. One or two of the justices have said, notably Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Justice Sotomayor have said at various times, it's a little harder to do with 8 people. We should have 9. But for the most part, we've heard very little. And we've even heard justices on the left and the right. I'm thinking of Steve Breyer and Sam Alito saying, this isn't a fuss. We could do this with 8. You know, we could go on like this forever. So they've really resisted, I think, jumping into the political fight about the court. And as a consequence, what we know only is that just generally they hate the characterization of the court as a 4-4 court with a, you know, moderate conservative in the middle. They feel, again, across the ideological spectrum, they feel very strongly that this is a court that decides most cases 9-0, 8-1, and that the American public, when they fall for the claptrap about liberals and conservatives, are really falling into a political narrative that obscures what the justices do most of the time. So they don't like that story. They particularly don't like it right now. The only power the court has, constitutionally speaking and practically speaking, is public legitimacy, right? I mean, the founders talked about it in terms of they wanted it to be the least powerful branch. They wanted it to have neither the purse nor the sword. The only thing that keeps the court functioning, keeps the lights on, is if the public still believes that what the court does is different from what the political branches do. And I think part of the reason that the last 14 months of kind of sharp elbows and obstruction and ugliness has really done damage is because whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, at some point you've turned the court and weaponized the court into a political football. For the court to be undermined and for the court to be politicized in this stark way really does, I think, lasting damage to the institution. And so one of the reasons you hear the justices pushing back on the story that this is a partisan fight is because for the justices, tomorrow they have to get up and do their job again. And to do their job, they have to be able to convey the idea that they rise above the political fray. And it is really hard to do that after the 14 months we've just had.
But now we do get to look ahead. And I'm wondering if Justice Thomas and Associate Justice Gorsuch will have the same kind of pairing that Scalia and Thomas seem to have, what it will be like at oral arguments, what cases coming up are likely to be affected by what we know about Gorsuch. What do you think?
The really intriguing thing is that while his doctrine very much maps onto Justice Scalia's doctrine, he tends to arrive at cases the same way Scalia does. He uses this lens of originalism or the original intent. He's very different, John, from Justice Scalia temperamentally. Justice Scalia really was, particularly toward the end of his life, very apt to use sharp words, to use the pithy, quotable smackdown. And in some ways, I think his sharp elbows really defeated his longer-term goal of getting 5 people to sign on. Justice Gorsuch, even though his constitutional approach is the same as Scalia's, is a very warm, affable, likable guy. And so if you go by the famous Justice William H. Brennan used to say, the only rule that matters at the court is getting to five, having four other people sign on with you. I think Gorsuch may actually have easier sledding just by virtue of the fact that he's a consensus builder and people like him. There are whole areas of doctrine. Guns is one of them. Even, believe it or not, abortion is one of them. Executive power is one of them that we don't know what Judge Gorsuch thinks because those kinds of cases haven't come before him that often. I think it's fair to say that not only will he be aligned with the kind of Thomas and Alito position going forward, but it's important to remember he's 49. He may be on the court for three decades. And so he can really, I think, start to move the needle in ways that Justice Scalia unbelievably didn't quite manage to do.
Well, we know he's an outdoorsman coming from Colorado, but wouldn't it be a thrill if he saunters over to Ruth Bader Ginsburg's office, knocks on the door and says, "Hey, I got us a box at the opera."
I wouldn't put it past him. And one of the things I like to remember about Scalia is that friendship between Scalia and Ginsburg, which absolutely transcended politics and ideology and methodological approach, that was a dear and fast friendship that, you know, lasted for decades. And to me, it's really, particularly in these partisan caustic times, such a nice reminder that the court really can be different, that these personal friendships really are enduring and powerful. And so I really do hope that not only does he go to the opera with Justice Ginsburg, but that he takes Elena Kagan out shooting the way Justice Scalia used to do. And that these friendships, I think, can maybe a little bit light the way for the rest of us who really believe that the right and the left in this country have nothing to say to each other anymore.
Dahlia Lithwick writes about the Supreme Court and the law for Slate and is host of the podcast Amicus. Dahlia Lithwick, thank you so much.
Thank you.